Yeah.
Cha-cha-cha.
We kind of wanted to play this as the song in the intro in the main show, but it's a little strong.
Yeah, I mean, Greg, being of the Jewish faith, might appreciate, you know, the or not. Maybe he's a little more grounded in it. You know, I'd be worried that, you know, playing that song would piss some people off. Like
that's not my. That wasn't my concern. As long as you recognize where it's from.
Check out this Deschutes cap. It looks like it might have been nearing the end of its functional life. It's kind of like bubbling.
And, oh, yeah, look at that. It's cracking and it's got bubbles.
Huh. It was thoroughly dipped in wax, right? But
yes.
It actually took some work with the razor blade knife, the box cutter, to get those things open. We thought ahead. We took the wax off the Deschutes in the Black Tuesday before we started recording. That's a first. That's some planning that takes, you know, 245 episodes to get under your belt.
Okay. Do you have anything? Because I have a couple science-y things to talk about.
I got a few things. If you want to do something a little bit lighter before we get into science,
that's fine. Bring it on.
I think, yeah, it's okay to talk about this. It's a work thing, but I think it's okay. We're looking at Google Docs, Google Apps for Business, a little bit, mostly for the collaboration. I still got some Black Tuesday here. I'm going to really take my time with it. You can save me just a little bit of that orgasmic if you want, or not.
Sorry.
No, don't be sorry. You can only drink beer one day a week.
Yeah.
So, really, today's your day, my friend.
Oh, by the way, we're going to be watching Birdemic Shock and Terror after this. So some of you know exactly what that means. Those of you who don't, look it up.
Do we want to do any kind of post show with Birdemic or live commentary?
Live commentary won't work, but we'll be watching the Riff Tracks.
I'll probably
version.
Be too tired to do something after.
I mean, we'll see. You might want to add something to it, but I think we'll enjoy it.
Okay. Well, anyway. I'm trying to think back to what was that Mystery Science Theater 3000 where they were like had the golf carts, like the space car golf carts. Remember that one?
Yes, Space Mutiny.
Space Mutiny, that's it, yes. That was a wonderful.
That was so funny. Because it was a piece of shit production, but it was an earnest piece of shit. That's what's important, right? Like The Room. It needs to be earnest. It needs to be done for the purpose of they really thought they were making something good. Because if they know they're making something shitty, it doesn't work.
Has Tommy Wiseau done anything since?
No.
That's a good question, though, isn't it? Do you know for sure he hasn't?
I mean, not anything major.
Was The Room major?
It certainly is now.
Anyway, back to Google Apps for Business. We're starting to look into it because, we're not a Microsoft shop. Mm-hmm. I really would not want to run SharePoint. And I can imagine SharePoint's better than it was 10 years ago the last time I looked at it. But it was a piece of shit then.
Right.
So the whole collaboration, real-time collaboration, no saving files, you know, we're kind of looking into that. It's interesting. Part of me hopes that we're not necessarily looking at it for the email and the whatnot. But part of me hopes that there's like a slippery slope that like, oh, but look how convenient this collaboration is and whatnot. And like the pressure.
You just want Wave back.
Well, if you, with all these things tied together with Google Drive, you can, I mean, it's not Wave. But there's some of the, you don't have to email attachments around,
mm-hmm.
you know, with the Google Groups. You don't have to forward whole long email threads around. Like, oh, like, you know, say you're like five exchanges into an email thread. You're like, oh, I need to add Greg. You know, adding you is not easy. With Wave, it was easy. You add Greg. Greg sees the whole thing. There's no duplications. There's no, you know, arrow, 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 and then like double arrows and triple arrows and things. You know, it was really easy to add a person to a conversation late. With, you know, the groups and stuff, it's you know, it can there, but like with it can, it's most of the, it's some of that, but not really what Wave could have done. You know, in short, if we jumped in with both feet, it gets me out of the email server business. It gets me out of the instant messenger business. It gets me out of like, you know, there's really an OPEX for IT, you know, a value here. So we just really, we're just the really beginning of a trial and see how it goes. But I'm kind of, I'm bullish that, that, you know, it might be some big changes and it's going to have to work, right? I mean, I'm not worried about uptime work. I mean, about like, the only complaint I have so far, maybe because I'm just not used to it, a lot of their apps, just like Google itself, the apps for business are kind of disjointed. You know, like you log in and it takes you to Gmail or it takes you to Google Drive. And but say you want to get to a wiki that's in Google Sites. It's disjointed. And then the groups and the mailing lists are there and it's disjointed. That's the thing. I'm surprised a little bit, but the way Google Apps for Business work is they have their core competencies, which is pretty well integrated. They have all these other things you can use, right? And like three or four of those other things are valuable to us, but they're not well integrated. So,
but it's also like, you know, you never know if Google could shut down something. Like if you imagine if you decided to do an RSS and throw a Google Reader in there, and now they're like, oh, in June, fuck you.
Yeah, yeah. I mean,
I'm sorry, everyone, for hitting the microphone.
Twice.
I'm being much closer to the microphone than usual.
Yes.
And that means I'm hitting it more often.
Exactly. Yeah, you got to worry about the oddball things. You know, we're not going to be using Orkut, you know. But with the apps for business, you know, there's like a Google Plus like that's internal to the company, which it's going to take some culture change to get people to use social media. There's a few people. Yeah, I mean, generally, like, there's probably like 5 people at my company that use social media like I use social media.
Right.
You know, like that people do. A lot of people don't get it. Because, like, I tried setting up, there's an open source Twitter type service called StatusNet for posting really short microblog things. And we had an internal StatusNet server for a while.
It reminds me of getting beepers from Nautica.
But we had StatusNet set up for a while. And I thought it would take off. And this is one of my early, you know, misconceptions. You know, I thought, like, this will take off because it's great because it's for those inconsequential things. You know, like, who wants to go to lunch at you know, Stokes Diner or, you know, at something like that? You know, you don't want to have something that lasts forever in someone's email box, you know, for that kind of thing. You don't want to IM them and interrupt them from their immediate, whatever they're focusing on.
But you can just add it with a bulletin board system, you know, BBS.
Well,
or a forum.
Sure. That's basically what social media is, right? So, I mean, I'll be curious to see if the Google Plus that's in this thing gets any traction.
You just have a couple protected Twitter accounts and just use it via Twitter, and then...
But there's no corporate management of that kind of thing. With the Google Plus and the Google Apps for Business, it's all... Like, I can say... I have the option of saying any Google Plus updates to the corporate Google Plus thing cannot be visible to the outside world.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I'm not sure I want to do that because marketing might want to use that as their...
probably not your let's go out to eat. Which reminds me...
But
I'm
but
open for lunches if you would like to go.
Nice. But like for the Google Plus, the default setting is only 4 of your people, right? So you just go on Google Plus and say, I am, like, for me, for IT, like, I'm thinking about doing blah, 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 blah. It lets people know what IT's up to. They can give me feedbacks, comment. I think there's value for social media in a company like this. Problem is, a lot of people don't use social media all the time, like you and I do. You know, we use social media, you know, regularly often.
I mean, I use Twitter a lot as a resource. I don't use it a lot as a to express myself, mostly because I have the show. And we've been doing the show regularly, like we talked about before. Mm-hmm. So there's not much of a need for me to throw things out there.
I'm a little bit on an ebb of monitoring Twitter. I haven't really checked out Twitter in a couple weeks.
Really?
You know, I haven't been paying too much attention. So,
we did get some recent tweets.
I'm taking some bit of a vacation, if you will.
A twitcation. So we got a tweet from Ted Monkey Boy 1955, who tells us to check out Kickstarter's has a Kickstarter for Rabbit Hole Brewing. He asks, "We can't have too many craft brewers. .. Can we?" And yeah, Ted, I think we can. And that's sort of my problem with the whole idea. I get it. Kickstarter, if you want to fund it, they can. So do what you want.
There's still room in a well-planned business, right?
Yes.
But there's, I think this is kind of a main show type topic, but I wouldn't be surprised if we're getting into, I don't know if bubble's the right word, but I think we're going to see a bunch of ill-planned breweries going into production and then subsequently closing.
Bubble is the exact right word for that sort of situation.
But it's not really going to be like a recession, I mean, it's going to be a bunch of people who fail.
Not, it's not going to be a recession in terms of how it hits the economy, but, like, but
But the last time we talked about a craft beer bubble or crash, there was a recession, right?
Mm-hmm.
This one, I see a bunch of people thinking it's going to be easy money, and they're not doing the due diligence to open a business.
Well, it's not necessarily easy. I mean, it's not as easy money. It's easy work, or it's like, or it's
I'm not going to
name work they want to do, and they feel like they can do, but there's more involved than just, especially now when there's much more competition.
There's one. I'm not going to name names. You'll probably figure out who I'm talking about. There's one local homebrewer turned brewer that we've talked about, or that we've talked with, there, even more clues, somewhat recently, that I'm not sure is doing...
Up for the challenge.
Doing all the work to... It's not homebrewing to collect the paycheck, mm-hmm. There's more involved, and I'm not sure they're doing the right things, so I think, lots of breweries opening, like last year.
Now, in a bubble, in a classic bubble, that doesn't matter for a long time until the market realizes, and then the bubble pops. So,
but see, when a bubble pops, even the people that are doing the job right suffer, right? Where I think we're going to see something more like there's going to be a lot of failures to launch. A lot of people not putting in the right work to start a brewery. They're going to start a brewery, and then they're going to close the brewery.
Right.
I see a lot of... I suspect I'm going to see a lot
of that. I imagine that happens a lot with wineries. I mean, there's so many... I can't keep track of how many wineries there are. So...
But I mean, like, if you looked at those Brewers Association numbers that they just came out with, the new breweries versus closed breweries this past year, not very many closed breweries. I think that number's going to go up by a lot over the next 5 years.
I think you're absolutely right. I mean, I can't see brewers continuing to...
I think it's people just getting in that aren't ready, that aren't, they're not business owners. They're not people ready to run a business. That's what I see. They're not good breweries that just didn't make it. There are people that didn't deserve to make it. That's the kind of the closures I'm
putting us. But that means that there's definitely a market saturation. I mean, that would mean there's a market saturation.
I don't know. I think there's still market. I think there's market if you do it right. If you run, like if you actually get a business person to tell you your business plan is sound, I think you can do it, right?
But what I'm saying is that if there is not a market saturation, if there's just a high demand, then even low quality breweries can get in on that demand and so succeed. If there is
That's counter to craft beer, though. That's counter. Low quality breweries succeeding, that's really an oxy.
No, it's not, because craft brewing doesn't necessarily mean good. Craft brewing just means small. And
craft brewing
means
the drinker cares about what they're drinking. They're not drinking shit.
But from the Brewers Association, the definition of a craft brewer does not have anything to do with the quality.
Well, no, I mean yes, that's but I don't think this bad brewer bubble or unprepared brewer bubble is popping, right? Because I think they said there was only like 45 breweries that closed last year, and yeah. like 600 opened. You know, it's
no, it's not happened yet. But you said in the 5 years, so I didn't yeah. say today.
But I think you know there's going to be a lot more people unprepared entering the market and subsequently leaving the market.
I think that's definitely true.
But I wouldn't call that market saturation.
But again, that's what we talked about before. Where
I don't, you know, but you called that market saturation. I say no. I say if you go in with a good business plan, if you find your territory, you find your niche, you make good beer.
What I'm saying is,
there's plenty of room.
It's a partial saturation. It's not full. But I mean, but what I'm saying is, if there's no saturation, then it allows people to come in there even with poor products. And fill a need. I mean, there are cell phones out there that are pieces of shit, but yet people buy them mm-hmm. because they fill a need. There are breweries that are going to out there that are going to be pieces of shit, but people are going to beat them because, oh, that's a new beer, you know, let me give that a shot. That's a little bit cheaper than the other beers. Let me take that. That's not Budweiser, you know, that's some sort of ale. So it has hop in the name. I mean, we talked about this before.
Yeah, that's a shrinking, and I mean, each way you cut it, that's it's a small market to start with, and it gets smaller and smaller and smaller. You know, because craft beer is not a commodity. You know, it's not someone looking for the cheapest version of a craft beer to take home. Price comes into play, yes, somewhat. But no one's looking for the, you know, $12 a case craft beer.
I think you're
beer.
Idealizing the case a little bit. I don't think every. I think you're,
I'm just saying your comparisons against the cheapest Android out there and craft beer is necessarily
valid.
Well,
I'm just saying that I don't think that every single craft beer drinker looks for, you know, is like us and like a lot of our listeners and looks for the best, you know, brew out there. I think that some craft brewers are going to be a little more adventurous. And
new small poorly run breweries aren't going to be able to compete on cost. How are you going to beat Boston Beer Company? You know, who makes a fantastic beer
by putting Pittsburgh on your on your beer taps? I'm not saying that East End is great, but you know, Scott realized that if he puts Pittsburgh on his beer taps, then he gets more people drinking it than otherwise.
Mm-hmm.
There are, you know, how are you going to compete with Boston
not,
beer?
But that's not an
just
equal
by
comparison.
Saying you're local.
That's not equal
just by
comparison.
Saying you're local psychologically
when you're
makes
in the
people
beer,
wanting to drink you more.
When you're in the beer distributor, the price of the case is really big, and where the K beer is from is really small. When you're at the bar, the price is not listed anywhere, and the tap handle says Pittsburgh. I don't think it's the same comparison. You're not shopping the same way.
Well, I don't. Well, I mean, like Scott, Scott doesn't sell beer yet in cases at the beer distributor. He just sells to bars. Most of these beer companies are just going to sell to bars for a long time.
I don't know if I'd say most. I mean, I don't think I'd say most. Not everyone does draft only microbreweries. You know, with canning prices and stuff coming in, you know, there's a lot more people entering in package breweries. You know, with cans and bottles, prices have really come down on those packaging lines. And East End Brewing is getting a canning line. So he will be competing with the retail sales
but
market.
But he took his time to get there.
It was his business model. And yes, a lot of breweries will do that, but a lot of breweries will also not do that. So
I'd be surprised. But anyway, Ed told us
that... Well, look at Drylog Brewing. Brand new brewery in Millville, a couple years old, really small still. You know, they bottle stuff. You know, they have retail sales. I mean, there's a lot of breweries that go straight to packaging, that, you know, small retail packaging. I think if you looked at it, you might be a little bit surprised from what you just said.
Okay. I'll accept that. I have not looked at the data as thoroughly as you have, so I can't.
I mean, there's a lot of different ways.
I can't make an argument.
A lot of ways to run your business. You know, do you do nano? Do you do micro? Do you do packaging? Do you do draft only? Yeah, that's part of what makes craft beer is there's, you know, six ways to, I mean, most of them are making livings, right? And that's great. Ones don't make livings, close. Beginning of the conversation was, I think we're going to see a lot more of those guys close because they entered the market ill-prepared.
But they may do a Weyerbacher and improve their beers. Could happen, mm-hmm. Right?
No, sure. I'm the side channel in my brain is like, I wonder if Weyerbacher got that much better. how much of it was me getting that much better? You know, that was the side channel going through my head. How much of it was I just expanded my palate and, you know, now I understand what they were always making. I think they got better, but there was a kind of a little...
definitely got better.
Yeah. There was a little guy on my shoulder saying, what if you, like, you remember when Boston Lager tasted like tinfoil, right?
Yes.
So, I mean, and now it tastes wonderful. I mean, there's a certain thing with our palates that, you know, we weren't ready for certain beers.
Yeah, but we could still taste... I mean, there were other beers that tasted great to us that Weyerbacher was doing that did not taste good. The same sort of style.
Sure. I still think Weyerbacher got better. But, like I said, it was just a side channel running through my brain saying, hey, what if...
Hey!
What if... That's all. We're talking about a lot of beer for the post show.
Yeah, this is new. Well, Ed had told us that we had Uinta Wild, then called Wildfire, a few years ago, and he's pretty sure we liked it. So I think we talked about it last week that...
Where are these tweets? I didn't see any of these.
They're at Craft Beer Radio. And this one is at CBR Greg and Jeff Bear. You know, the ones that we tell everybody to tweet to.
Why don't I see them?
I don't know.
Why is my Twitter not working?
Greg Miguel really loved our...
yeah, I saw that one.
Yeah. I wasn't as enthused at the time, but listening back to it, it was funny. Because I was trying to tell a story, and Jeff was sort of intruding, but listening back to it, it was actually a really good call on your part, Greg's right. But, you know, I was like, no, I was trying to get this point across, don't interrupt. But, you know, the hindsight being 2020, you made a right call. Okay, science time? Do you have more?
Yeah, no, I'm just trying to figure out where all my Twitter shit that I haven't seen is. Like, I haven't seen this one from Ed. Okay, yeah, we had Uinta Wild. Did we say we never had Uinta? I didn't mean to portray that. I remember many of the Uintas that I've had. All right, we're back. Sorry for the pause. I was trying to find the pause button.
So Uinta, I don't remember much about Uinta. I mean, you know, things that amaze me about the show is, like, I remember we've had West Flutter in 12 three times. That's pretty amazing.
Mm-hmm.
That we've got it three times. That's ridiculous.
No, we had some Uinta in, and I think they're kind of available in the... Well, you obviously bought it here, but, I mean, a while back, they made a brief appearance to the market. Yeah, we did Wildfire. I think someone sent that to us, and we've done some other ones from Uinta. And I remember having a cool conversation about they made a strong beer and how they sell the strong beer in Utah, and it was sold at the liquor store and blah, 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 blah. So we had done that stuff before. I just found out, you know, I'm looking at my Twitter. I'm like, oh, I got a couple favorites recently. I'm like, I'm glad this tweet got favored. The tweet was, making me listen to marketing people talk about Twitter makes me want to throw a brick.
Now, what do you mean by that?
I was at work, and our marketing manager was talking about how we have a marketing company do our tweets for us.
Ooh.
And, yeah, our Twitter is horrendous and whatnot. But the way she was talking about it, she's new. And she's talking about how she does the Facebook, and maybe she'll do the Twitter, but she's talking about, like, how she does the tweets, and, like, Twitter's okay to, like, post the same thing over and over again because people won't look more than 20 tweets down and blah, 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 and they might not see it the first time. And just, I was getting very angry. Getting very angry. Twitter is not about guaranteeing your message has been seen.
Right.
Twitter is about making a lot of messages and hoping some of them have been seen.
Yeah, if you repeat the same thing over and over again, then you are not tweeting, you're spamming.
Mm-hmm.
It's in everything, a culture develops, and a culture developed in Twitter that if you're going to do things, you do things. Every tweet should be different.
Every tweet should be different, and you should know that only 20% of the people are going to see any particular tweet,
mm-hmm.
and you shouldn't get heartburn over making your tweets. You just throw things at the wall and see what sticks.
Right.
Right? That's what Twitter is. And, yeah, listening to... it, like, I was debating, do I try to talk to our marketing manager about fixing our Twitter? But I got a bunch of IT stuff to fix, so I kind of passed on that. Maybe later. Maybe in a little bit I'll come back to that one and try to get our social media social instead of the crap that it is now. It really makes me sad. We have people at trade shows and the tweets come from an office from some marketing consultant who's not at the trade show. What the fuck?
So what was your other favorite tweet?
It was about Headhunter. I said, damn, last bottle of Fathead's Headhunter. Why aren't cases 28 bottles instead of 24? Why don't they add an extra row to the end of the case, make it a little bit wider?
That got favorited by somebody?
No.
Sorry.
I'm not saying it's gold. But, you know, think about it. Why are cases... Why doesn't someone make out a 28-bottle case?
Because of laws, regulatory laws that insist that they have to be a certain number.
They have to be... used to be... No. Not every state. I mean, Pennsylvania used to have to sell 24 bottles of Bombers because 22 or 12 ounces of Bombers wasn't enough for a case. You could sell 28 bottles of 12-ounce beers and still be a case. Your price point would be higher, right? So it's probably a competitive thing. You wouldn't be competitive with every other beer. I've never priced out like the Rolling Rock Pony bottles, those 7-ounce bottles they put out. Uh-huh. I wonder if they came out. They must have come in like 30 packs or something. I don't know.
Well, I mean, the obvious answer is buy more Headhunter. Don't complain to us about it.
It was just a tweet. Again, inconsequential. See what goes. Throw it against the wall and see what sticks.
My last favorite, as far as I can tell, was somebody favored me talking about Improv for Humans being the best podcast in the universe. Matthew Harkler already said that. Favorite of that. My most popular tweet that I can
most
tell.
Most popular? Oh, how do you do that?
Well, I don't know, but I mean, the one that I got 2 retweets and 3 favorites on, that's pretty big for me, was when Andy Bobra, who was a writer on Community, said that he killed Community because the first episode of Community came back, of season 4, came back with like a 1.9, and the second one came back with like a 1.0, and he wrote the first episode, so he was saying he killed Community, and I responded telling him, Sony killed Community. You guys are just in charge of the funeral because Sony.
Oh, I saw that one. Sure,
Dan Harmon. You guys are just in charge, and so that got 2 retweets and 3 favorites, including from Andy Bobro. He favorited that tweet. So
nice, nice.
Yeah,
look at you.
So I mean, it's,
friends
it's,
in big places.
Well, it's cool that you can connect with the people like that who are doing those things. That's the great thing about Twitter. That's what really finally kind of won me over into Twitter was the idea that you could actually connect to people and just have conversations without getting, you know, super deep.
So this is probably going to make... Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to interrupt you. Finish.
Without getting super deep, but without getting into just, you know, into the, you know, a major relationship with the person, but you can still have conversations with people, even people who are, you know, huge people or people who are doing industries completely different from you. You can just still have conversations and it works great. People you don't know, you can still just talk to, and it all works. And that's sort of what sold me finally on Twitter.
So here's a Vine that I sent out a while ago. This is the Children's Museum. It's a wooden, they call it a wooden mirror. And here, take a look at it while I'm describing it. It's a little panel, the shape of like an oval mirror, and there's a bunch of little blocks of wood with little actuators behind it and a camera, so it digitizes your image and then it tilts the wooden blocks, so
cool.
It either reflects light or is dimmer based on your image at a very, you know, relatively low resolution. I don't know, it, you can go on my Twitter, go on my Vine and see this video. It's really neat. It's probably 200 little blocks on actuators that all tilt when the, you know, the digitizer says, you know, be dark instead of light. Mm-hmm. And it was just a really neat
cool idea.
Little art project there.
I mean, it's basically pixels. It's basically
really big pixels. Yeah. and you're tilting a little block of polished
wood. Mechanical pixels. Which is, I mean, it's a cool idea. Mm-hmm. You're right. It's a very cool idea.
Yep. So saw that last time was at the Children's Museum of Pittsburgh. Got a retweet from the Children's Museum when I tweeted that, and a retweet from someone else. So
awesome. So, okay, so there are two big science stories.
Okay.
One of them...
If it's about the Higgs boson, I'm going to throw a brick at you.
None of them are about the Higgs boson.
Good. I'm sick of the Higgs. Fuck the Higgs.
One of them... You know, okay, here's something interesting. So slightly off topic. So I had a conversation with yeah, I went to Easter with my friend's family, and there's a person there who I always talk to who we sort of banter back and forth. I mean, we like each other, but she's into like what the bleep do we know stuff, and I try to tell her, you know, that's not true, and the real problem with that. Is like, because she's not traditional religious or anything like that, but she bought into the whole what the bleep do we know thing because...
I'm not sure I follow the what the bleep do we know
okay, thing. So what the bleep do we know is this sort of... How do you explain what the bleep do we know? It was a movie made by, actually, it turns out, made by this cult... That it was just it was woo woo. It was Carver cult science and woo woo. So it was like they took real quantum science and they turned it into the secret type shit. Like you can think stuff, and that will make the world happen that way. Because quantum science is, and they took a couple things from quantum mechanics that are weird, and then extrapolated out from that into ridiculous shit. And the thing that, you know, I should have said, and it could have came to me afterwards, but I didn't say it to her at the time when I was explaining to her things like, you know, how quantum stuff works. But I should have said is that, look, the quantum world, there's amazing things that can happen to it, things that blow our minds, that boggle our minds how they could happen to it, things like tunneling and entanglement and all these kind of weird things. However, it's not a situation where anything goes. This is the most important thing about quantum mechanics. There are like 20 things quantum mechanics can do, and that's it.
Brian Greene just said the exact same thing you just said on Science Friday last week when he was
really
there. Yeah.
I mean, there are very, very specific things mm-hmm. that it does.
Yeah, you're quoting. You are literally quoting Brian Greene.
Really?
From Science Friday.
Yeah. I didn't listen to it. I don't know that. But that's exactly the point. It's this tiny thing, this tiny thing. That's what it can do. And they blow our mind, but it's not an anything goes proposition. It's not... You can imagine anything, and it can happen in quantum mechanics. No, not at all. I mean, the Higgs can mm-hmm. decay in 12 ways.
Mm-hmm.
This, it's...
Well, I mentioned, let me have a really short aside about Brian yeah. Greene. He was on Science Friday. They were talking about... It was Brian Greene. It was... who's the famous physicist from... Arizona.
Lawrence Krauss.
Yeah, Lawrence Krauss. And, you know, of course, you know, Ira Flatow and one other person. What the hell are they talking about?
Well, Lawrence Krauss is probably doing his Origins program stuff.
Yeah, it was based on that. But Brian Greene was there. And Brian Greene actually said, you know, when he first started writing, you know, they told him to keep the actors, the researchers out of the story and whatnot. And he wrote The Elegant Universe. He said it was a piece of crap. It was boring. Put everyone to sleep. It was the first time I ever heard him say, because, I mean, I always saw him talking up on Nova, The Elegant Universe, blah, 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 blah. And he said that was a shitty story. And, you know, he basically rewrote it or, you know, something later. I don't know. But, you know, it actually gave me a little more... Give him a little more credibility, a little more respect for me, you know, to Brian Greene. So.
Oh, I have lots of respect for Brian
Greene. You have. We had this conversation not too long ago about you, Brian Greene, and I was a little more, you know, I was relating to him very similar to Michio Kaku.
Yes.
And you don't like Michio Kaku at all.
No.
and you like Brian Greene, you have some respect for him. I'm gaining that now because, I mean, he admitted, you know, like, Elegant Universe, not a good story. And like later stories, I can't remember if he wrote Elegant Universe or Nick's story, but he kept the stories of the research and the scientists in it. And it's a more human story now.
Absolutely. You know? I mean, we've talked about it before, how story is everything.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, yeah. story is how we interpret the world.
They're talking, oh, that's the third person was, who's the Scottish author that writes about, what was his name? Ian McKellen?
Ian McKellen, the actor?
No, it must have been McKellen. It was...
Ian McKellen's Gandalf, right.
No. But they had him. He writes a lot of science stuff in fiction. Like true to science. So not science fiction.
Hard sci-fi?
Yeah, hard sci-fi type thing. So those are the three people on the panel. And where was I going with this? Brian Greene saying... I forget what I just said, so I forget where I'm going. Damn beer. Anyway, it was supposed to be
on weed, and it was like totally.
It was supposed to be totally a short. Confused. Oh, there's another thing to talk about.
But you know, you were talking about how Brian Greene was talking about story. It was story was what you were talking about.
Oh, story is yeah. They were talking about how, well, you know, since they had the author on, you know, talking about how story. But then yeah, both Brian Greene and Arizona guy, what's his name?
Lawrence Krauss.
I'm sorry. Beer. You know, they're talking about how making science as education, you know, having the story in there, make it a more human thing. And it was a really good segment, and I got a lot of...
I'll have to listen to it.
Gained a lot of new respect for Brian Greene. And, you know, Lawrence Krauss, I knew a little bit about. I know him kind of okay. You know, so, and yeah, he definitely reinforced there. It was a good segment.
Watch The Universe from Nothing on on YouTube. That's he has a whole lecture. It's a great lecture and it's fantastic stuff. But the two science things that I want to talk about, the first thing was there's a whole lot of news just like in the past couple days because the AMS team released their report. Now, AMS is the Alpha Magnetic Spectrometer that's been placed onto the space station. It's a $2 billion project. It's a big, expensive thing. And the basic idea is... Let's see if we can find positrons and where they're coming from. The idea behind that being, well, we think, based on lambda CDM, that dark matter is a...
All right, lambda CDM was something you said last week. What is that again?
Okay, lambda is the cosmological constant. CDM is cold dark matter. Lambda CDM is a parameterization of the Big Bang cosmology model that basically pinpoints or gives the idea that, you know, there's a certain amount of dark energy, dark matter, and
okay,
matter.
Right.
Okay. So the idea is that since dark matter should just very occasionally collide with itself, if it does that, then it should produce energy, and that energy should come and then reform itself into positrons and electrons and fire off, and we should see that. And the AMS project has seen positrons. It's seen a bunch of them coming from all over the sky. And there's been a lot of reports recently that, oh, this is evidence. Hey.
Heather needs to print some more things.
Oh, this is evidence for dark matter. And that's not the case. This is... It's important to articulate exactly what's going on here, which is that... No? I thought you liked that.
I thought you would, too. I just gave Heather a little bit of the abyss from the main show. Oh, she's busy getting stuff ready for her consignment sale tomorrow. So she's probably not in the mood to appreciate a beer, but that should be up her alley.
Yeah, well, you know. Maybe the Black Tuesday. give that a shot. Hey, yeah. Give it a shot. Anyway, the point here is that it really all it was it was saying the Alpha Magnetic Spectrometer is working extremely well. It's doing what it's supposed to be doing, and it's detecting positrons extremely well. there could be a whole lot of reasons why we're detecting positrons in the numbers we're seeing them that have nothing to do with dark matter. So it's not, despite what people have said, it's not an indicator of dark matter. And maybe 5 years from now, when we have more information, an indicator. But right now, it's not.
I see.
So I wanted to get that across.
Okay.
You can read more about that on Matt Strassler's blog. He has a lot about that. And I think his blog is called, let's see here, Of Particular Significance. And he has talked about the AMS results. So the other thing is this cool article in Nature about something that I hadn't really followed at all. But this firewall idea, which is about black holes. So the traditional view of the black hole, you're falling into a black hole.
Mm-hmm.
You pass the event horizon, and if it's a big black hole, you don't really notice anything until you eventually are spaghettified.
Right.
The firewall is people started to analyze this, and the Hawking radiation idea, came into play. Hawking radiation is, well, the what empty space is not actually empty. There is seas of particles.
It's quantum mechanics meets black holes, right? Where probability says stuff can actually be over there outside the event horizon, right?
Well, no, what it says is that particles, form the whole... It's a lot more mathematical than it sounds like, but what happens is a particle and antiparticle form, they're actually given energy by the black hole's gravitation. One falls in, one shoots out, and that the one that falls in gives negative energy and radiates out energy from the black hole, which causes the black hole to actually shrink. The theorists realized that instead of the event horizon being simply an area of no return, it was actually a firewall, what they call it.
That one's 19% alcohol by volume. A little too strong. Heather always likes the strongest stout that a bar has, but that one's a little too strong, I guess. And the first one was 11%. She's not in beer mood tonight, apparently.
So the idea is, in the regular picture, you fall, you fall, you fall, you fall, you fall, and according to Einstein's theory of relativity...
Oh, that's so good. How can you not like that?
Sorry, Greg. your view of the outside world and your view of the it doesn't matter what your view is. Mm-hmm. But this clashes with that by saying that, no, your inertial reference frame, essentially you encounter suddenly a wall in space where you simply burst into flames. that because of all this seething activity at the event horizon of the black hole, you actually, if you hit the event horizon, you'd reach ridiculous temperatures.
Okay.
Because of the amount of energy that's being caused.
Oh, so all your molecules and atoms would be, agitated.
Yeah.
You would gain so much kinetic energy or whatever.
Well, you'd hit this area that's just seething with energy,
mm-hmm.
and it would be as if you were just walking along normally, and suddenly a brick wall appeared out of nowhere.
Maybe that's where spontaneous human combustion comes from. Microscopic black holes.
Microscopic black hole would not cause a gigantic thing to happen.
But it usually starts from like a small little space, and like the person smolders out and dies, right? I don't know. Spontaneous human combustion.
I think they figured out spontaneous combustion. Yeah.
People fall asleep with cigarettes in their beds?
Yeah, exactly. And it's the wick effect. But this is...
Go ahead and print.
So the weird thing about that is that there's a fundamental problem here. One of the two things is wrong.
Ignore the laser printer sound. Heather needed to print some things for the consignment sale.
Either.
That's really loud, isn't it?
It is pretty loud. Okay, so here's the problem. So Einstein works in the equivalence principle. you know, relativity works in the equivalence principle. The idea that, you know, if you're falling into a gravitational field, it should be the same. It should be the same experience as if you're not.
Okay, yeah, sure.
But if that is true, then this firewall interpretation can't be true, because the firewall interpretation says the information is destroyed, and in quantum mechanics, information can't be destroyed. So one of the two, or both, is wrong. Now, we know they're wrong in the sense that we know they're not complete, but there's a serious problem with how we understand black holes because of this firewall issue.
Eh, black holes.
I just thought it was fascinating.
It is, but part of it is like, okay, if they don't get it, I can't hope to get it. So I'll be fascinated briefly about it, but then I gotta kind of just like not worry about it.
Yeah. But just, I mean, imagine that, you know, all the crazy things you learned about black holes and spaghettification and all that stuff. Imagine that that's just overturned. That doesn't actually happen. And that you hit a black hole and you burst into flames and you are instantly vaporized.
Well, sure, you're... It's just, I think that's more of a level of scale. I mean, okay, so you hit this region of intense energy and all your hydrocarbons combust, right? But your atoms...
No, combust is different.
Okay, this...
Combustion
is... You said burst into flames, that's combust.
Yeah, okay, but it's not... I mean, this burst into flames... Okay, so burst into flames...
So what do you mean?
You're heated to ridiculous temperatures,
your metal atoms vaporize.
You essentially actually disintegrate. You're down
to the atomic level,
to the quark gluon level. You.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So like your atoms aren't even falling into that black hole. What happens then? I mean, do they have a theory on like you just hang out then that
no I mean, horizon you, or do you, you fall hit, in? You hit some sort of you hit this. Amazing amount of energy, and then I guess sure. your constituents fall in, but you know as a quark gluon plasma, as opposed to as you know your so but any event
tomato,
horizon
tomato
but any event horizon. So that means that you know the idea of the you know the which Neil deGrasse Tyson talked about the super massive black hole where you fall through the event horizon and you wouldn't even know that would not actually happen. As soon as you hit the event horizon of any black hole, you would hit this seething mass of particles and be
I guess what I heard recently from Neil was, you know, you'd be fallen forever
right
before you get spaghettified. It would happen. You'd have a plenty long time.
You'd be falling
time.
Forever from the point of view of somebody outside, but from your point of view, you wouldn't be.
He still made it sound like it would be weeks, months.
It could be.
Yeah.
It could be. In a supermassive black hole under the ordinary conditions of relativity.
Yeah. But, you know, it's tomato-tomato, right? Your carbon atoms fall in, or I should say, your cells fall in, or your quark gluon plasma falls in. What's really the difference?
What's really the difference? The difference is your tomato-tomato in terms of what ultimately happens to you. Yes, big deal. But in terms of is relativity violated or is quantum mechanics violated, that's a huge issue. That's a major, major deal. So that's why it's interesting.
Well, I was talking more about the essence of yourself. Matter, the essence of your...
Oh, no one cares about that. What people care about is yeah, whether this shows that... It shows really kind of one of three things. One, our understanding of relativity is wrong.
It doesn't show anything. It's a hypothesis, first
of all. Wait, let me...
Okay.
One, our understanding of relativity is wrong. Two, our understanding of quantum mechanics is wrong. Three, we really just don't understand black holes that well. That's really what it comes down to, and it's probably three. But if you were to ask me point blank, and three was not an option, I would have to say relativity was wrong as opposed to quantum mechanics. And the reason why, even though relativity is extremely important to quantum mechanics couldn't exist without relativity. Quantum mechanics is, and I've talked about this before, it's so much more, it's so much more, the predictive power is so much more advanced than relativity. To orders of magnitude, several orders of magnitude greater. There's something amazing and wonderful and unique about quantum mechanics. That it tells something about our world so definitely. And relativity tells us some interesting things about our world, but on sort of a gradient scale. And we know when it comes down to it, that's not how the world works.
Yes, but the way you just said it, it sounds like you can figure everything out from quantum mechanics, and you can't. Figure out gravity. You can't figure out...
No, so, in quantum mechanics, gravity doesn't play a role.
Right. So, again, this goes way back. We haven't talked about it recently, but it goes way back to unified field, right? It goes back to the theory of everything. It goes back to you need to reconcile how gravity... So there's really two sets of rules depending on your frame... on which one you need to use to figure out the problem.
Well, I mean, the real problem is the hierarchy problem. The problem is that the weak force is 24 orders of magnitude stronger than the gravitational force. We can detect the weak force. And we call it weak because it's, you know, 2 orders of magnitude less powerful than the electromagnetic force, which is 3 orders of magnitude less powerful than the strong force. It's something like that. It's along those lines. But then there's 24 orders of magnitude between the weak force and the gravitational force, and that's why we haven't detected gravitons, because it's ridiculously weak. It plays out in large-scale things, like the Coriolis effect.
Well, it's very additive,
We don't see the Coriolis effect in small stuff like this water glass, but we see the Coriolis effect in large things like the Earth. We don't see gravity in small-scale things, but we see gravity in large scale things.
Don't disagree. And just, you know, where you left a little bit earlier made it sound like quantum mechanics was better than relativity. And
it is.
It's not a complete. It doesn't solve all problems.
It's better than general relativity, not special relativity.
Oh, general.
Important distinction.
Okay, right.
It's a better theory.
I blame the beer again for forgetting which one I wanted to talk about.
It's a more, I don't want to say complete. It's certainly not a pretty theory, but I don't think the universe needs to be pretty. I'm not one of these people who thinks that the universe has to be pretty. I think the universe can be ridiculously complicated and ludicrous.
It kind of is.
And that's fine, and that actually works for me. That actually works better than the universe being pretty to me. The idea that the universe is just this ridiculous mishmash seems to me, and this is just my personal feel of things. This is not science. This is nothing but my philosophy of things. The mishmash of things seems more likely and seems more evidential of something real than that everything is very pretty and beautiful and lovely.
But also
a tiny equation.
Yeah, this is getting a little philosophical and not very scientific. But
nope, not at all.
But I mean, what I'm about to say is even more so. It's if it wasn't for relativity, there wouldn't be enough stability for intelligence to arise. You know, that kind of thing, right? Like,
I mean, relativity is extremely important in quantum mechanics. I mean, the quantum field theory is all about relativistic quantum fields. I mean,
yeah, but if everything was just probabilistic, right? Like, if everything was like, oh, you know, you could either exist or you could be vaporized. You know, it's like if it was like, you know, at a macro scale, right? If that happened, you know, we wouldn't have been able to last the several hundred thousand years that we've been intelligent
right. So,
beings, so
something very interesting and very complicated happens when things get larger and larger. And this is where emergence comes in and where there's a lot of trying to understand chaotic systems that are fundamentally at their very fundamental level random, but they build up in things that don't necessarily equal randomness. It's a very interesting and frightful topic to try to comprehend, and no person can comprehend at all.
So let's talk about weed.
Weed.
52% of Americans think that weed should be legal.
Absolutely. 52%. Right. What's wrong with that?
That's a lot of people who want weed.
It's not want weed. It's just a lot of people who realize that weed is okay. Yeah. We do a show.
Well, no, it's so there's a little bit of a thing I was going to get into was, you know, 52% of Americans think it's okay to legalize weed. However, it's a much smaller percentage. I can't remember the number who are comfortable with people smoking weed near them. You know, or using weed near them. Like so they're like, oh
yeah. I imagine that there's a lot of people who are fine with people having the idea to smoke, but there are lots of those people who want people smoking near them, just regular, you know, tobacco.
Right.
So it's the same sort of situation.
But the thing was, I wonder if the question was, you know, was fair, because like, sure, I don't want someone smoking weed right over there, but if they're eating brownies, I don't give a shit, you know? So it's like, I wonder like how fair that part of the question
is. I don't think that big a deal. I mean, the point, okay, look, we do a show about a drug that's an intoxicant and a depressant, right? Yeah. Or drinks that have that in them. And people recognize that, you know, marijuana is not a narcotic, but rather it's a mild hallucinogen and psychoactive drug. Mm-hmm. And people recognize that alcohol is considerably more dangerous than marijuana. And so there's no reason, there's no legitimate reason, and this is becoming more and more things people realize, there's no legitimate reason for to have marijuana be illegal.
Some other interesting parts is it's pretty much equal everywhere. Urban, rural, mm-hmm. states with current legalization laws and ones without, you know, the support percentage is pretty much equal everywhere. So it's a pretty global thing.
And as more old people die off, it's going to get more and
they
more.
They were talking about how, like, the baby boomers, they went through a cycle, right? Like, in the mid-70s, late-70s, they were overwhelmingly pro-marijuana.
Mm-hmm.
And the same people in the 80s and 90s turned anti-marijuana.
Because they're all into cocaine.
I'm wondering, I was wondering if cocaine and the war on drugs lumped, you know, a smear campaign on marijuana caused that. I think it was probably a smear campaign,
probably,
right?
Yeah.
And then, you know, they're basically either dying off or pro-marijuana. And they're a little young to be dying off, you know, especially the baby boomers, per se. But, yeah, so, I mean, that was a little interesting flux, too. And I think the war on drugs, in like a smear campaign, was probably the...
Absolutely.
Was probably part of that.
The reason why that it be, you know... Oh, everything, every drug is bad. But then people started to realize, well, wait a minute. We're surrounded by drugs constantly.
Oh, caffeine.
Yeah. And we're you know, we're taking drugs to keep our moods better. We're taking drugs to have our kids succeed in school. We're constantly influxing ourselves with drugs. And if this is a drug that helps people relax or just, you know, lets people have a good time, why are we getting to the situation where we're, you know, this is a drug that's less dangerous than almost all drugs out there. There's no way you can die from it. You can't overdose on it. You can't get into, you know, poison situations like you can with other drugs.
The thing that's most crazy, and if you followed it, you'll know. If not, you haven't, is like researchers can't even research marijuana because it's class A narcotic. Yeah. So like, you know, there's the whole, like, there's like three people in the country, making up a number, but like three people in the country that have like legal means of researching marijuana, and no one else can really publish on it. It's crazy. You don't let the researchers find out, especially it's not synthetic. It's all natural. It just seems like crazy that they can't research and find out the characteristics. You know, it's just no marijuana, narcotic, marijuana, bad. You can't see if any of these, you know, anecdotal things about it easing pain. I mean, I'm sure it's not even anecdotal anymore, but,
yeah,
you know, all the medical benefits of it are legitimate or not, you know. No, you're not allowed to have marijuana in your lab, or I'll arrest you.
Yeah, no, but I mean, more and more states are coming around with that. I mean, mm-hmm. Colorado and California. And,
overwhelmingly, like even more than the people that are pro marijuana legalization, is the people that think it's not worth the expense in prosecuting marijuana. I think the number on that is 62%, 65%, 70%.
I read, which is that there's a reason why marijuana prosecutions are high, and that's because police love them.
Police love them. What, yes, do you mean love them? Love them, so, because they're easy. Love them because...
Because they're easy. Because they allow them to meet certain quotas if they need quotas.
They watched Wire Season 4 about, you know, meeting quotas and shit. So.
And in terms of safety from other, compared to other drugs,
hey, man, ridiculous. What are you doing?
Yeah, I mean, you don't have to... I mean, you know, you don't have to worry about people getting violent on the drug. You don't have to worry about, you know, people getting crazy. You
can pull over 15 motherfuckers.
You can pull over 15 kids, and probably two teens will have some marijuana on them. So you can get your quota. You can do it in an easy way that does not have people throwing up in your car, or, you know, or going crazy, or fighting you. It's just easy. It's just so easy.
I hear you. I want to ask you, I know you're not going to give it up. You're going to make me watch The Wire. But I'm wondering if Carchetti is going to maintain his no quotas, do good policing, or if he's going to fall back into, we need these stats. And they're going to start juking the stats again.
You know, what do you think?
I think they're going to start juking the stats again. Carchetti's going to need the numbers.
You think? You think there's been a trend? He's in Game of Thrones, by the way. Carchetti, yeah. We didn't do Amazon Anonymous.
Amazon Anonymous. But you said there was only one thing.
There's only one thing this week, but I made a point to say, don't just do this week, you know. Don't list all the things. We can go back in time.
We're not going to guilt you on only buying one thing this week. Any more than that passive-aggressive guilt trip right there was.
The only problem I have is that I want to talk about some other things that were interesting in the past,
mm-hmm.
but the thing that the person just bought recently is actually really, really cool.
Well, let me see what this is, this thing, before you spoil it.
Oh, I mean, it's cool to me because I know a little bit of the story about it, and it's a book. It's just in the orders section. It's not in the earnings yet.
Yeah, I'm checking the ordering. I'm doing the last 7 days here. Okay, so a couple things we saw last week. There's two things. Two books were sold this week since last Saturday. I guess you'll do one and I'll do the other.
Okay, so... I mean, first of all, I want to talk up. Thank you, whoever it was who bought the Kindle Fire. That adds a lot to us. That helps mm-hmm. us out a lot. So thank you very much for that. But so Fordlandia was very interesting because Henry Ford's forgotten city. This is a crazy thing. I forget what nation he made this, but Henry Ford made this, you know, the sort of ideal, or he came up with this idea for this ideal community, and he made it in some other country. And staffed people in there, and it lasted for like all of like 12 or 15 weeks or something. I don't know.
It was in Brazil.
It was in Brazil, yeah. So,
you know, it's funny because it rang a bell when you started saying that. I'm like, Brazil. And I just double checked here, and yeah, Brazil. This was in 1927, I think.
And, you know, he made all these. Maybe been a couple of years, but it didn't last. His perfect society thing did not last at all.
But he brought us the assembly line, so cheers.
But he brought us the assembly line. He was also a fantastic Nazi. But yeah, amazing story. So I imagine the book is really good because, I mean, it's a fantastic
story. Ford's early successes of imposing clocks and square dances on the jungle soon collapsed as indigenous workers rejected the Midwestern Puritanism, turned the place into a rabid tropical boomtown. Oh, so it turned into like Deadwood. That's a neat book.
Yeah.
Fordlandia.
All it's right. Kind of like, for you gamers, Bioshock. It's that sort of, same sort of deal.
So I guess I got to talk about the only other book we sold this week.
You don't have to. You can talk about anything going back in the entire timeline.
I know, but then I got to run a whole new search. Let's see. Quarter to date.
Don't use quarter date. Use exact period and go January 1st. That will give you a whole list. Although, I mean, I don't see a big problem with it. Somebody just was interested in the True Blood series, and somebody made it.
But what am I going to say about that? You know?
Yeah, I don't know.
Maybe the books are good.
They inspired a TV show.
And the books are often better than the TV show, just because the theater of the mind, right? So, exact period.
That reminds me of here. This is a great video. Here, turn on the.
You are turned up.
Okay. Sorry, you have to listen to this. Anybody who's a Game of Thrones fan will appreciate this, I believe. You got a new favorite show? Been watching HBO. You got a new favorite show? Been watching HBO. You got a new favorite show? Been watching HBO. You got a new favorite show? It's called Game of Thrones. Well, I read the fucking book. I said I read the fucking books.
So the scenes where the guy's in the field with the sword, it looks like he's like, is that from Game of Thrones? Tell me about Jon Snow. How does the lips line up with the...
What?
The lips line up with what there's with the lyrics. Is this me?
No, it's these guys pretending they're... No, it's not actually from Game of Thrones.
Oh, so that scene where out in the snow with the swords
it's
is
the
not...
same dude.
Oh, okay.
Anyway, go on.
I'm just looking through everything that was purchased to date this year.
That's called Rage of Thrones, by the way.
Definitely. Okay, so I don't know. I don't know anything about this, but I'll, you know, instead of wasting too much time, my Amazon anonymous pick is the 50 Count Cigars Cherry Humidor Cutters Lighter Holder Gift Set for
$59.99.
Mm. Never smoked anything in my life, let alone a cigar joint. But someone, you know, bought this thing. Let's see.
Remember when we got that? We got some cigar thing from some brewery?
No.
And I insisted on having the box because it was a nice box.
Okay.
And
it came with cigars or just the...
It came with a cigar cutter and a humidor box thing.
Generally, I can remember like all these little trivial nuances of the show for the lab, but maybe that's one thing that's escaped my memory.
I still have it, and it's a cool box. And it's the same sort of thing where it has a little humidor pack and a cigar cutter in it.
So, let's see. This exclusive humidor is a great gift for your boss or any cigar lover in your life. Each unique cigar gift set contains the following items.
Now, first of all, one thing that I should make clear about cigars is that you don't inhale with cigars. You're sort of puffing in your mouth, getting the taste of the tobacco, and then blowing out. It's more like, it's like pipes, too. It's that same situation. You're getting a taste.
I'm trying to, I'm sorry.
But you can't, I mean, it's not like, you can still get cancer from that sort of thing, but it's not as horrible as cigarettes where you're drawing it into your lungs and blowing it out. It's more of a flavor thing.
Mm-hmm. Sure. So I'm looking at the picture, and there's a picture, and there's a paragraph in the picture. What is this bottle of tonic? That's what I'm trying to figure out here. Let's see. There's a, you know, there's a humidor, there's the cutters, there's some crack vials, there's a butane lighter, maybe there's a butane canisters, I don't know. Oh, those are the tubes that the cigars come in, I guess. You can't really tell the scale, that's why I say crack vials. But what's this bottle of tonic? So I'm going to go down to the description. Spanish cedar line, adjustable divider, brass framed, hygrometer, metal guillotine cutter, cigar cutter, cigar.
Okay, so 50% mix of propylene glycol, 50% distilled water, 2 ounce bottle.
What's that for? Let's see.
I have no idea.
Propylene glycol. That's
It can be used as an antifreeze, but it's generally used as a preservative. Humidification solution. So it probably just...
Oh, you drop it in the humidor.
Yeah.
Humidor. You don't, like, put it in your cigar.
Right.
Per se. Okay. All right. I don't have to Google that anymore. So that's my Amazon Anonymous because... Mostly because I was ignorant about cigar culture, I guess.
I'm not a big cigar fan. I like the smell. You know what? If you ever been near somebody with like an old-fashioned pipe, I actually like the smell of that. But, you know, I know it's bad for you. It's all bad for you. Much more harmful for you than marijuana. But that shouldn't stop you from doing it if you want to. That's the whole, you know, that's where Greg and I have a libertarian mindset in that sense. Do what you want. I mean, it's your life.
H&R Block Home Premium 2012. Someone's doing their taxes and gave us some cut.
Woo! Thank you. If you need to do taxes and or you get a refund and you want to spend it, by all means, craftbeerradio.com/A. Oh,
this is okay. So one more piece for Amazon Anonymous. Mm. People who bought the H&R Block tax software also bought Scotch Magic Tape, 1/2 inch by 450 inches roll of tape, $1.27.
Okay.
I don't know. I don't think Scotch
tape.
Probably,
that, you know, that's probably cheaper than you get at like Staples or something.
I don't think Scotch tape with tax software. I think Staples. Like stapler.
But yeah, but I think that that's cheaper than you would get at Staples.
But they're suggesting. But the other things are suggesting H&R Block at home premium. J.K. Lasseter's Your Income, Norton 360, oh, tax and antivirus. You got to bundle those together. And, you know, some more J.K. Lasseter tax stuff. But, you know, a roll of tape is...
I don't know. I mean, it just so happened probably that somebody bought a roll of tape of that, and that was what they put in there. And
Hopkins 52-inch snow broom.
But what it says is customers who bought this item also bought. It doesn't necessarily mean they bought it at the same time.
But
it just means
if
they
Amazon's
also
worth
bought.
Their salt, they should put a little bit of that. Person bought this because they bought that, not because they're eclectic, but because they have something to do together, right? I mean, that's what Amazon should do.
Well, since they have that for every single item, that doesn't necessarily compute because some people just buy individually, and so they're just going to look into people's. Okay, what else do people buy? I mean, there's a spare scissors
people who,
there.
People who buy taxes buy Legos.
Yeah, so...
People who buy taxes buy the printer toner that I bought. It's the same printer toner you watched me install, an hour ago, mm-hmm. 2 hours ago.
Well, so, I was peeing. That's kind of all I have. We're going to watch Birdemic Shock and Terror.
This is a really scary... remote root exploit on Linux servers and Apache. So any Linux sysadmins, check that out. They're modifying Apache to serve in special cases a remote iframe to go to a malicious software installation site. But to install this module in Apache, they're getting remote root, and they're also patching the SSH server on these Linux boxes. And as far as I can tell, they have not figured out what the initial infection vector is. Scary shit. Like, pretty locked down boxes where, like, only one user has root password, root password strong. So there's a remote root exploit in some service.
There's some zero day that nobody knows.
Well, in some service, right? Some service are doing a buffer overflow and getting a remote root without, like, hacking SSH. I just heard about it today on Security Now, and there's like 2,000 websites out there, like big websites like CNN and shit, that have seen this on their servers. So, just so you know, if you're a IT security guy,
says goddamn North Koreans. It could be there's sophisticated hacks out there. You know, Stuxnet, remember that whole thing?
Yeah, this could definitely be sponsored, but, you know, they're doing so much to cover their tracks. I mean, I'm like, really? Like, okay, so, sure, once you get remote root, you can clean the logs. But if the server is pre-configured for remote syslog, stuff goes out as soon as it happens. You can't get that back, you know, so you would have to remote root your syslog server, too. Someone's got to have the info on what this attack vector is. But the researchers are trying to figure it out now. It's like it'll only inject this iframe if you're on Windows. And I think he said if you're coming from a search engine result, right? So it looks at the HTTP to refer. Mm-hmm. So you have to have the right kind of refer. You have to have IE on Windows or something like that. You can't, like, they're not. Search engine bots and stuff like that are not getting served this iframe. And it's a module that they ejected deep into Apache. You need root access to install this to change the config file. And they're also changing out the SSH daemon. So it's kind of scary. So not what I wanted to hear on Friday. I mean, our attack surface for, you know, Apache web servers and stuff is pretty small. I'm not too worried that we're infected by it. But still, it's like, fuck, I got enough shit to worry about. That's all I got.
Well, hey, I think it's time for a little birdemic.
Bird motherfucking demic.
Shock and terror.
No awe?
No awe. Shock and terror.
All right. Please buy something on Amazon so we can talk about you next week.
Pretty please.
Buy something really weird. Find the weirdest shit you can find on Amazon. There's a contest.
That's a good idea for a contest.
What's the weirdest motherfucking thing?
People who listen this long. It's okay if it's cheap. We'll still talk about it.
Cock rings are good.
Oh, you know? God, cock rings would be great.
All right, I'll see you
later.